This is an amateur recording of Seamus Young's book, How I Learned. It can be found online at his website, seamusyoung.com/20sided tale.
Chapter 22. $4. Patrick and I are still visiting Dad on Sunday afternoons. He moves roughly once a year from one tired old apartment to another. Most of his places are one-room efficiency apartments. A single room serves as a bedroom, kitchen, and living room, which is inevitably connected to a tiny, underlit bathroom. His apartment is strewn with open books, which are lying face down on almost every horizontal surface. He's got an overflowing ashtray beside every place one might sit or sleep. He brings the same four or five items of furniture with him every time he moves. It takes him about 2 months of living someplace to infuse the walls and carpet with the indelible smell of cigarette smoke, coffee, and Old Spice. There's always a haze of dust and smoke in the room, and no amount of fresh air can dislodge it. Our visits have a familiar rhythm to them. We arrive, make small talk, and have some food. Sometimes Pat and I cook a vat of macaroni and cheese. Other times, if he has a little extra money, Dad takes us out for lunch. After that, we play some chess, and he'll tell us stories. He tells us, selected, bits about his years in North Carolina. He shares anecdotes about how he met Mom. He talks about his time in the Marine Corps. Once he's out of stories and we've exhausted our repertoire of in-jokes, coffee matter! Ha! The conversation dies. At that point, we call Mom, and she comes to get us. Dad doesn't own a car and hasn't driven since the stroke. Here are a few of his stories. Long before I was born, before he even met Mom, Dad was in the Marines. He got in a fight a couple of days before boot camp and wound up with a black eye. This was bad because it made him stand out, and standing out in boot camp is dangerous. His drill sergeant nicknamed him Badass. Dad was also a bit heavy when he went in, and so he was obliged to do all of the calisthenics while wearing a heavy rain poncho. This murderously hot and humid in Paris Island in the summer, and he was running around in the environment while encased in the equivalent of a heavy rubber coat. Years later, Dad saw the movie Full Metal Jacket, and the depiction of boot camp was apparently so realistic that he was hyperventilating at suddenly reliving the experience. In 1980, he attended an inaugural hippie party, where they hung newly elected President Reagan in effigy. They were up for the second balcony where they had erected the gallows, but the number of people overwhelmed the aging structure and it partially collapsed. Reagan was hung, but they had to vacate the balcony instead of gloating over him, or else risk having it fall off the front of the house entirely. That same evening, a woman pulled a knife on Dad when he made one too many drunken passes at her. His entire worldview changed when he sobered up, and today Dad has a picture of President Reagan on his wall. I wonder if this is just part of the recovery process. Do alcoholic Republicans become liberals when they stop drinking? At one point, Dad had a couple of roommates, Alan and Terrence. Alan was a drinker like my dad. They drank to get drunk. If anything fun happened while that was taking place, so much the better, but the goal was to be, and hopefully remain, drunk. Terrence was a wine snob. One day, Dad and Alan were sitting around frustrated. They were broke, and so, no booze. Terrence showed up with a bottle of wine, and decided to impart some culture on these two cretins by introducing them to fine wine. He showed them how to open the bottle properly, how to let it breathe, explained the importance of using glasses with the right shape, and generally irritated Dad and Alan by putting a bunch of ceremony to the process of having alcohol in their bloodstream. The bottle was two-thirds of the way gone when Terrence decided to go to bed. He was a little disappointed at how much of the wine was consumed. After all, wine is there to be savored and enjoyed, not guzzled. He told Dad not to drink the rest of it and taught him how to lay the cork on top of the bottle to keep it from going bad. Then, in a move of heroic optimism, Terrence left a tipsy alcoholic alone with an open bottle of wine. Dad destroyed the rest of the bottle in a couple of minutes, and then the anger set in. He was out of booze, the wine tastes like grape syrup, and it had barely given him a buzz at all. Terrence was a douche, and Dad knew where he would be bitching tomorrow when he discovered the wine was gone. Frustrated and more sober than he would like, Dad decided to go to bed. He pissed in the wine bottle and then placed the cork on it, just as Terrence had instructed. The next day, Terrence complained that something had happened and the wine had gone bad. I suppose most accomplished alcoholics have a broad selection of "one time I acted like a jackass" to somebody's stories. Dad's charm was such that the listener would side with him no matter how far or how flagrantly wrong he was. Today, Dad has another story for us. This one is more serious. He doesn't get out the chessboard, and he doesn't tell it to us over a meal. He sits down at the table and makes sure he has our attention. During the dark year, well before he sobered up, Dad was visiting us near Christmas. He was flat broke and sober. After Pat and I went to bed, he hung around and talked to Mom for a while. Maybe he was hoping she would offer him a drink. She didn't. Even if she had booze in the house, she probably would have known better than to let him near it. He tried to borrow some money, but she wouldn't have any to spare. Finally, she said goodnight and left him to see himself out. Dad got up to leave and thought about the grim prospect of ambling home sober. Then he noticed the stockings that had been hung over the crappy space heater and more or less failed to keep the place warm. There were two of them, one for each of his sons. He reached inside and found $2 at the bottom of each. There were no other presents, which meant that that money had been overlooked at Christmas. He took the money and left, planning to drop by Martin's Inn, which was just around the corner from us. $4 wasn't going to get him drunk, but it might take the edge off sobriety. As he crossed the street, he was hit by the truck, which resulted in his lengthy hospitalization. Dad takes $4 out of his pockets and gives us each a pair of bills. He asks us if we understand. We do. He isn't really giving us back our stolen Christmas money. This gesture is symbolic. The $2 represent all the other things he took from us when he left all those years ago. He's showing us what sort of a man he was when he was drinking, and he's apologizing for not being there for us. 12 years from now, I'll identify this as step 9 of the typical 12-step program. Number 9, make direct amends to all persons we have harmed whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Of course, Dad can't really make amends. He can't repair the damage he's inflicted or give us back the childhood we might have had. He can't be our father now. He's a disabled man living on veteran benefits, so he can't even give us financial support. He needs us to forgive him. This is a revelation to me, since I didn't understand until now that he'd done anything that required my forgiveness. I've never connected any of my trials with his actions or understood how his alcoholism affected me. I just saw him as a guy who was dealt a bad hand and played it poorly. What would have happened if Dad had died in 1971? The stroke nearly took his life, and it was only blind luck that it happened to live near a hospital capable of attempting the procedure that saved him. Pat and I would have been left with photographs of faithful young Jim Young. The vibrant, well-liked, handsome, former Marine and dedicated scholar. The quick-thinking guy with a sharp wit and a radio voice. Instead, he survived. And we came to know the limping, divorced, recovering alcoholic Jim Young. The heavy-breathing guy with a gravel voice and no income. We could have mourned him as a hero, but instead, we were with him as a broken man. There is no good or bad luck, only the steady unrolling of random fortune, which is a heady mix of heartache and mercy. I take the $2 and blow it on candy, which is how I would have spent it when I was 10. Seems fitting.